Welcome to Ever Beyond, on Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sour in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, yes, you are listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, and you're listening to JP on Ever Beyond from Ever Beyond Radio. And my guest tonight is Aurora Lulu Healing Tao Massage. which one can I address you by?
Oh, you can just call me Aurora.
Aurora. Okay, we'll call you, because I've had several guests called Aurora. There's a lot of people call themselves Aurora, and it's like, well, it's kind of like Dawn. Everybody, you know. So tonight, my guest is Aurora Tao Massage, because you've got some websites, and so we need to pinpoint which one of my guests you are.
Right.
Because I've had at least two Auroras so far. Oh, lovely. Hello. Big crane fly has just flown into the studio and is now crawling along the screen. Lovely. Very nice. Anyway, he's come to play. At least he hasn't come to bite me. All the little tiny ones, they come to bite me. And they're attracted to my screen because it's the light in the room. You don't understand what I'm talking about. The room is full of tiny little biting insects and other annoying things. Anyway, so welcome to Ever Beyond. We have an unusual show tonight in that it's a kind of how can we put this? Well, how would you like to introduce? First of all, tell me and then the audience exactly what you're going to do to me tonight.
Okay. Well, I'll be nicer to you than those little mites that are crawling all over your screen.
That doesn't take much, actually.
I've entitled the evening The Creation Story of the Archons and Their Descendants, or A Creation Story for Realized Humans. And before I begin to talk about this, I just wanted to quickly thank you, JP, for everything that you do. You have really changed my life. And I think that you have probably changed a lot of people's lives. And I also wanted to ask you, how are you feeling today? Are you there?
1 minute.
Okay. Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, how are you feeling?
A lot better.
Good.
Having realized that I've had concussion all week.
Yes.
And it's knocked some sense into me, and it's all good, you know. Cuz you know how they say, "Oh, well, you know, I had all this mind control and then all this amnesia and I didn't remember a thing and then suddenly I got a blow on the head and I remembered everything." Well, it kind of, there's a bit of that gone on. It's just like a little bit of like who I am, who I feel like, you know. What it feels like to be me. And the meanness of it, the meanness? That sounds mean. But the intensity of my own character is showing through in more, I feel my body more. Let's put it like that.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. So I was worried about you the other day as we were trying to put this together and.
Oh yeah. I was just exhausted. I've come to the end of my, battery. I was really like the little light was bleeping and it was saying, please recharge this battery. And I needed to just completely stop and allow the vibrations to come out that were sort of, underneath the whole thing. And, I had a day off and I let that happen yesterday. It was good. And, For some reason I played Genesis all day. And I've never really been a Genesis fan. You know, in my teens I wasn't much of a Genesis fan. My mates were all into Genesis and they were all into prog. And I was listening to the 11th Earl of Mar. Now I have no idea why the 11th Earl of Mar had this particular thing, but it's got that bit that goes right in the middle of it. And that does something. And then there's this other one, which is, you have your own special way. And, that was, that touched something. So I don't know what it is, but, we'll see if that all comes up during this evening's, Gestalt that, is, bound to, form as a result of this stirring of the pond of consciousness, as you will be, making.
I love the idea of Gestalt happening. Well, I'm glad to hear.
Oi, Gestalt.
Gestalt. Yeah. So I'm really glad to hear that you're better. And I also wanted to just.
I wouldn't say I was any better. I wouldn't say I was any better. I'd probably say I'm a little, little better.
feeling better.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But it's feeling a little ruder. Actually, yeah. A little ruder in health.
Well, I also just wanted to thank you again and thank the people that you have on your show. Simon Parks has made a huge difference in my life, and I've just been listening actually in the last about 8 months now. Of course, Alex Collier, Wynne Keach, Max Steele, Nancy and Walt, thank you for Shungite. I am very, very sensitive to computers and cell phones, and I was having a very, very difficult time even using any devices, and I feel like a normal human being most of the time because of Shungite. It right away, and you know, I was just listening earlier, and you were talking about the elite Shungite, and actually that's the first Shungite I picked up, and I felt so much energy from that. So I do wonder if different types of Shungite, connect differently with people, because I don't feel quite the same kind of sensation when I pick up, just the other type of Shungite. But I have it on my, Walt and Nancy took good care of me. I have a piece on my refrigerator in my car. I wear several pieces and, I sleep with them, so I just really appreciate them. And then, of course, Jessica Morocco, who is just such a wonderful healer and a wonderful person. And I got her through you, too. And, I was feeling very lonesome for people of like minds. And so when I found out that she was close to me, I've gone up to see her like 4 times now, and she's done a world of good for me. So thank you, JP, for your service.
You're very welcome. And I'll have to find out how it manages to change anybody's life, because it's really, I'm just marking the kind of thing, just marking my history. And I've always had this feeling of that I was marking history. It's just like everything that was happening to me was happening to the planet and going through. But the thing is, at this point, I'm feeling like I'm making a departure from what's going on in the world. As Nancy and Walt are and everybody, we're choosing a different reality, which, I don't want that. And I believe that I have I know I have the choice. And I can choose another reality and actually change reality as it happens. So, by knowing what doesn't work and what does work, that's always a good idea, isn't it?
Yes. Well, that's a good introduction to what I would like to present to you today. And the intent for this show, this is going to be a little play that you and I are going to perform together and discuss a little bit, after each section of it. This play is actually just act one that we're going to do tonight. And there is a little bit to cover, but this is really the story is about the God before the God in the Bible. This story is taken from Gnostic texts, this first act is really about the prime creation story, the true original cause. This story goes before we were Lyrans, or before we were on Orion, before Sirius, before Andromedan. Before all of that, I believe that the texts that many of the illuminated people have come from these Gnostic texts. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do this with you, two reasons. The first was I've listened to practically everything that Simon Parts has put out on the internet. And so, of course, I've listened to every single one of your shows. And I remember a while back listening to a question that someone had asking Simon Parks about Yaldabaoth. And he said he did not know that term, which surprised me so much, because a lot of the information that he's talking about, the archons, all originate from the Nag Hammadi library and the Gnostic texts. So I was very surprised about that. And also, I just thought that your listeners would probably, if they haven't had a chance to look at these texts, and I'll tell you a little bit about them in a second, but I just really thought that they would like these stories and to see how these stories interconnect, because we're all bringing our stories together and interconnecting them. And the second reason is because, you know, I've just recently, and that was the reason why I contacted you, I've just recently had a huge breakthrough, and it's very much due to the Gnostic texts. And, you know, something that I have been, you know, we've been all really trying to find out, where did we come from? How did we get here? What's this purpose? What's going on? And we're all coming with our different stories and our different points of view. And certainly that has been from the beginning, of, as far as I can remember, those were the questions that I was asking. So, you know, that's what I would like to present today. I would very quickly like to give a little bit of background about myself, just because, you know, I always like to know who people are that I'm listening to, and because, you know, we all have very interesting stories, I think. And as I talk about some of these texts, it's nice to know, you know, where people are coming from and what their expertise might be. And I will, first of all, I do want to say I am not a Gnostic scholar. The Nag Hammadi scriptures I first started reading back in the late 1970s, when they actually first came out. And that was the time where, at the time, the man that I was married to, he came out to Boston, which I still am in, to Harvard Divinity School. And they had just come out at that time. And so it was through him that I learned about them and started to read them. And of course, back then I didn't know very much. I was actually, I'm actually from Utah, and I was raised Mormon. Left the church at around age 27, just about the same time this man and I split up. And it was interesting because I left the church because at the time there was, and as there is now, a lot of things coming out about it that you know, that showed that there were some, you know, some inconsistencies and perhaps even lies and things told about it. And for me, it was kind of a deal breaker. But to go all the way back to my early childhood, on a very basic level, I never really quite understood the religion. It seemed like scriptures seemed very violent to me, and a lot of the teachings and the kind of fear-based, guilt-based, shame-based ideology and kind of indoctrination was really hard on my spirit. And so even as a child, it was very hard for me to really connect. And it's a funny thing, I'm the only one in my family who left and who needed to leave. I come from a military family, actually. My father was in the Air Force. He served in the Korean War. Both of my parents are also experiencers of UFOs. They both have their UFO story. And strangely enough, you'd think that Mormons would, I don't know, I'm not really sure how people perceive of Mormons, but these stories were just, you know, off the cuff stories. They weren't a big deal in my family. Just like the stories that my mom would tell about the poltergeist in my aunt's, you know, home, these stories of UFOs were just part of our daily, oh yeah, by the way, I saw a UFO today. But in the Mormon religion, Mormons believe that God is like a human being, is like man, but only greater, and lives on the planet Kolob, and that one day we can all go and be with him, and someday, you know, be gods like him and be, you know, have our own planet. So I think that in some way that might have been one reason why it seemed very common. The other thing I remember when I was very young was walking down the street in the town that I lived in, which was a very small town in northern Utah. And I remember thinking and feeling, I am alone here. I am the only human, and everyone else is a robot. And I felt so alone. I felt like this abyss in the center of my heart. And I didn't know why I felt that way. But I do remember that I did not seem to feel like other people.
Yeah, I've been to Salt Lake City too.
Well, actually, it's Brigham. It's north.
Brigham.
Salt Lake.
Okay. I never went north. I only went south. Hey, have you heard of the Manti crew?
The Manti
community, TLC group?
I don't think they have.
The True and Living Church of the Last Saints of Jesus of the Last Saints of the Days of the something. It just gets really complicated.
Yes. Well, and there's so many, you know, like fundamentalist groups, and, you know, my parents weren't polygamistic. You know, they're not, there are a lot of fundamentalist groups, you know, that offshoots. I will say, and this is how I feel about really anyone, and that is even with my own family, and that is I will meet and join anyone anywhere. It hasn't been easy for my family, for me not to be Mormon with my family. There have been many times I felt like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I just buck it up and just do what they're doing? But I really find that I don't want to be separate from anyone in humanity, and certainly not my family. And so if I were to say what my religion is, it's just to be and unify with whoever I'm with. And if that means I go to church, I'll go to church with you, you know. I don't want to be separated spiritually from people. I do want to just talk a little bit about, I am in recovery. I was bulimic for many years, and I think that the bulimia also had to do with the fact that I was an empath. probably a healer, and I couldn't stomach the world very well, and I ended up going into treatment for bulimia. I was bulimic for about 13 years, and I've been in recovery for quite some time now. But when I left the Mormon Church, I was really trying to figure out, part of the reason I left it is because I thought I wasn't going to recover from bulimia if I didn't. But secondly, I started to just look into other religions, and the first one I looked into is Ekankar. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ekankar. It's about soul travel.
Yep.
Have you ever, do you know of Ekankar?
Yep. Yep. Heard of it.
Okay. Yeah. So I
avoid
was there,
like plague,
for about
apparently.
3 years. Was that?
Avoid like plague.
Avoid like plague. Well, you know, it's really funny because all of the different groups I joined, I kept wondering, why can't I stay in them? And, you know, later found out that there was a lot of fraudulent, and you know, information. But I left that and created, because I was really trying to find out who God was. And if, you know, if the Mormon Church wasn't true, what was true? And I left that Ekankar and created my own goddess. I called her Mina because she was mine, and I prayed to her for a while. And then I joined this Ascension Society, which was run at the time by a man named MSI, or Society for Ascension. And I learned some of the Ascension techniques. And actually, this was a really interesting experience because there was a point in a long meditation I did where I actually popped open and I saw the world as a heavenly place. And this happened for almost half a day until my ego got involved and I came crashing back down. But I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know anything at the time. I was really new to some of that. And I didn't know that heaven was really part of this earth and, you know, what you were talking about, how you can create that reality. But for about 6 hours, I could just, everything glowed, the whole world glowed. I was in so much ecstasy and happiness and love and peace. I thought, you know, I would never get anything done if this is the way I felt all the time, because nothing would matter to me because this is so beautiful. And I, you know, just to say, I really have never taken really any drugs or anything like that, so I didn't really know how to compare it with any kind of drug-induced state. But it was something that that really made me see a different reality. And then, excuse me.
Actually, I'm listening, Aurora. I'm listening to you on. Are you hearing me through my through your headphones?
I am.
Because I'm hearing you through your laptop microphone, not
okay.
through that. Not through the headset mic, but
okay, that's so weird, look, because I thought that was on. How do I turn it on?
We'll have to do that in the break.
Okay.
But anyway, so
is this hard to hear? Am I hard to hear?
No, just keep your head pointed towards okay. the, because you keep going off mic when you're turning your head. I can see
okay.
you're turning your head. There we go.
Okay,
yeah,
come up, all right.
Come up close.
I will. I'll come up closer.
There we go.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you
for that tip.
Thank you. That's better.
All right.
It sounds like you're shouting across the room.
Yeah, really. That's what it sounds like. So I also joined a group that talked about original cause. And this was a woman named Sandra Rohan who was channeling these different books. And we would get together and we would move all of the emotions. And actually it was really pretty fabulous, in terms of just being in a group and the whole group is moaning and groaning. So, I mean, I've done some pretty crazy stuff. In 1999, I found Barbara Marciniak and was introduced to the Pleiadians and you know, she was, really instrumental in taking me on a journey that certainly has brought me to you. I also around that same time, saw the movie The Matrix and was amazed that they actually got to make that movie, since I had learned that that's what the world was. And what was really funny about that was I'm sitting there watching it thinking, oh my gosh, the word is out. like everybody's going to know now that we are part of this matrix. And when I walked out of the theater, I was so surprised to find that no one was really changed. I just thought it was science fiction and it wasn't, you know, it just, it, and then I thought, well, maybe I'm just insane. But it was through watching the Matrix movie that I found David Icke, and he had come to Boston a couple of times, and I went to see him both times. And anyway, so this is sort of my pathway to, you know, years of researching this this kind of information. I've always felt like I'm on a bit of a pathless path. I am a certified yoga and a Taoist sexual teacher, initiated in the Immortal Way, and I do tantric massages and sexual healing. I have also studied tantric Buddhism, shamanism from the bone tradition. I am a feng shui consultant. My teacher is a tantric Buddhist, and I also practice other healing modalities, Eric Pearl's Reconnection, Byron Katie's Inquiry. I am a student of Dolores Cannon. And
Sorry about that. I just hit the keyboard accidentally.
That's okay. I just heard a wolf cry.
Yep.
And Dolores Cannon, I was one of her last couple of a year or two before she died. I learned her regression hypnosession, quantum healing hypnosis techniques from her. And I also, I'm a Kundalini yoga instructor as well. So, basically that's a bit of a background for me. I would say that if I had a mission statement, it would be that, I'm here to balance the male and female energy of the planet.
No pressure then.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No pressure then.
Oh, no pressure. Oh, I thought you said one question. Well, no. Yeah, I guess not. But you know, just like you, JP, I can't help just going ahead and doing what's in front of me to do. So, you know, it whatever it is, it just seems really important right now. So what I want to talk about. So why these non-commodity scriptures are really important to me. About 9 months ago, I had something happened where it feels like I had a curse put on me, and I had just finished writing a wonderful writing retreat. I am writing a book, and I was really feeling like I was getting in a very good place with it, and it was like the rug was pulled out of me and I got bed bugs and I couldn't sleep. I had different things happening to my body. Pretty much all of my relationships were just going out the window, especially the one with my son's girlfriend, which just broke my heart. And I was just beside myself. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't work. I didn't work for 6 months. I couldn't write. I haven't been able to write, you know, pretty much since then. And I was just trying to get my, you know, figure out what to do and how to just continue. I was depressed. I was suicidal. I hadn't been in this state for so long. I mean, I really have lived in the last 10 years pretty grounded, beautiful life, and this was just something that really freaked me out. And so I don't know how, but I was looking online to see if I could find anything about anything, what was going on with me, and I found Simon Parks. So this was my introduction. This fiasco is an introduction to coming to Wolf Spirit Radio. But not just that, it was also, I should say also that I also started to learn about, you know, implants. I also started to learn about, you know, the Valon and the Djinn and the, you know, curses and things like that, which I had no clue about because I didn't know exactly what was going on. And it, the strange thing was I kept feeling there was something in my left ear and I could not get it out. Well, a few weeks ago, I had someone do Dolores Cannon's quantum healing hypnosis on me to find out what was going on. And when I went under, I asked the subconscious if I had had a psychic attack. And the subconscious said, yes, you had. And then I also asked, was there a device that had been implanted in my left ear? And it said, yes. And so the subconscious or the superconscious, I asked it to take it out. And so it said, I will try and I will do my best and we'll see what happens. And seriously, after that session, I have been a different person. And I really feel that something has gone out of my left ear. And I'm feeling back to normal. And I wanted to say, JP, you know, the last time you had me on, you know, my background, I also didn't say I have an MFA in acting and writing and theater. So I'm used to performing. And so when we first talked, I felt very comfortable with you and I felt like, well, this isn't going to be hard. And then when I got on and I understand it now, I feel I was being attacked. It was like my mind was being wiped again and again. And I couldn't focus. And in fact, at one point, I think you tried to like calm me down during that and just say, okay, I'm right here. But I couldn't figure out what was going on. And then when we broke for the, you know, for the hour, I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to get through another hour of this? And then when it was over and my website was actually taken down, which also freaked me out because in the 10 years I'd had that website, it had never been taken down. I thought, what's just happened to me? So I went to bed and I was exhausted. I just felt stripped. I've very seldom ever felt that bad. And when I woke up in the morning, my website was back up. And luckily that day I had an appointment with Jessica Morocco and I went to her and she said, yeah, she said, this was, from Japan, some AI in Japan who didn't want you talking about what you were talking about. And so she put some protection around me and she also said that you had protection and I've also got a lot of protection on now. And really prepared myself this time. So anyway, I want to apologize if I didn't sound very coherent the last time I was on. And I also very much respect now a lot of the work that Simon and many other people are doing and you, that you're doing and Jessica. You know, there really is something to it.
The way I see it, Aurora, is it's a bit like if you have a boat. And the front of the boat is a kind of snub nose. It's got a flat front. And you're trying to push it through the water. And it's really hard. Okay? There's a lot of resistance there. And essentially, we're like a snowplow. Or an icebreaker. Because we're moving into new territory. Very much like the sun is moving into a new territory in space that is kind of, it's denser, it's thicker. The air is thicker. And so it does feel like there's a lot more resistance because it's our job to magnetize this material before it hits us. And when we magnetize it, we create reality out of it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, at that time before the, bed bug incident, I was actually doing some things about the chemtrails. I was using different methods to try and disintegrate them, and I don't know if that was another reason. I don't know. But the other thing that I wanted to say about these, tonight is that, so in the last week, I had a huge breakthrough. And being a healer and wanting to heal the masculine and the feminine, you know, it's like we don't really know the whole story. We don't even know where we came from, how we got here. You know, if you look at men and women and you look at, you know, if we were created by, you know, an intelligent being, you know, it isn't very intelligent. You know, it's really not intelligent creation. If you really look at the polarity of the masculine and the feminine and how we interact, how our bodies are, sure, we can connect, you know, sexually, but we're very different when it comes to our needs and the way our minds work. And so for so many years, I've been trying to figure this out. And I do write about this quite a bit in my website, my Healing Tao Massage website. But I've always felt that the Gnostic scriptures held something about creation in it. And this week, everything fell together. And I can't even tell you. I feel like I've had a spiritual awakening. I'm very excited to share this with you, all of you. And I will just say that, I was listening to Audrey. I think his name is Audrey, the Lyran that Max Steele talks with.
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, he gave a meditation that really, I would say, goes right along with what has come about for me. And in what am I trying to say here? Where I want to take this, because at the end of not today, but if we continue to do this, I want to give you a Taoist meditation, which is a very powerful meditation. It's a secret meditation from my lineage, and it also is what he's talking about. But to get to that, I want to go through this story, because this story will help you understand what that meditation is and what it means and what it can actually do and who we are and who are these archons and why is this creation so crazy. So let me just see here.
Before we go any further, the views and opinions expressed by my voice in the next an hour and three quarters, does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of my own personal self. Just saying that, I don't know what I'm going to be saying, but I'm just saying, I often voice things and it's clear, but here on my show, it's like usually my own opinion. You see? You understand what I'm saying?
So I would love your opinion.
So I'm just putting my own personal disclaimer, just in case you might hear me say something that, like, oh, that doesn't sound like JP. But anyway, well, we don't know yet. We don't know, because, you know, I'm playing different characters. So, do you want to start with this? What would you like to do?
Well, let me just first give a short introduction. Tell you exactly how we would love to see this unfold. I want to talk a little bit about the Nag Hammadi, just very quickly about what it is, how it came about, because it's a very interesting story. And if people don't know about the Nag Hammadi scriptures, then I think you'll really like this story. And then I want to talk about how God changes your brain, and then that should be at the top of the hour. And then we'll go into the script and we'll just go right into it. Okay. And I put your part on and I put my part on. So I think you'll be able to read it, and we'll just read it, and play with each other. So does that sound fun?
Okay. He said cautiously. on air. But we will also we'll get you a little more close mic'd. This is close mic'd, okay? This,
okay. All right.
Because distant mic is a bit like, you know, again. But would you like to? Okay. So there's your intro. please carry on. Please.
Okay. All right. So I just want to talk about the Nag Hammadi scriptures, and let me just see. So back in December of 1945, an Arab peasant made an astonishing archaeological discovery in Upper Egypt. And this man was Muhammad Ali al-Saman. And it wasn't until 30 years later that that we really get these texts. He was digging with his brother. He and his brother had a feud, and his father had been murdered. And they'd gone out to the Jabal to dig for saba, which is a soft soil they used to fertilize their crops in. And as he was digging around a massive boulder, he hit a red earthenware jar. It was almost a meter high. And anyway, at first he didn't want to open it because he thought a djinn might be inside, but then he considered that there might be something valuable inside. And when he opened it, he discovered inside 13 papyrus books bound in leather. And so, funnily enough, he returns home and he just dumps all of these books next to the stove. And his mother actually burned some of the papyrus. But later on, he does end up, a few weeks later, Muhammad Ali, he and his brother go out and they avenge their father's death by murdering this man, Ahad is Ishmael, they murder him pretty badly. They hack off his limbs and ripped out his heart and devour it amongst them, which is their ultimate act of revenge. And so he gets put in jail, and he's afraid that that something's going to happen to these texts, so he gives them to someone to hold for him. And the man is actually I think a local history teacher, or at least a local history teacher saw the books and suspected that they might have value, and so he sent them to a friend in Cairo. And anyway, long story short, everybody starts to become very interested in these books. It takes a while for them to figure out what it is. But they find that these are ancient texts, and they are written before the Bible was canonized. At least the New Testament was canonized, and they contain many different things: Christian stories, stories of Jesus' words. Creation stories, but they're different than the ones that are in the Bible. Jesus' words are different than the ones in the Bible. The creation story is different than the one in Genesis. And, what they sort of saw and tried to put things together was that, these texts, these were really sacred texts, and the Catholic Church during the time of Constantine was really trying to get rid of the Gnostics and their different Christian texts, because at that time they were trying to create a religion that all believed the same thing. And so these texts were heretical. And I think his name is, Irenaeus of Lyon was a big wig in the Catholic Church at that time. And he would write, they realized from his writings that that's what these were taken from, because he quotes some of them and some of the heretics that were writing them in his book. And so anyway, the Nag Hammadi scriptures came out of a time when these Gnostics were actually being killed and murdered because they weren't even allowed to read or preach any of what was in these books. So in my opinion, you know, in reading them and looking at them and trying to understand them, they are a lot of what we've been talking about on Wolf Spirit Radio in terms of the archons, in terms of who's in charge here, the Anunnaki, in terms of how do we get back to being enlightened humans again. The answers are all, in my opinion, in this book, in terms of bringing it all together. And that's why I think it's a really important book to look at and to study. Any comments?
And so, yes, indeed. Well, I have been aware of Gnostics, because of course it's the root of the knowledge, Gnosticism.
Exactly. Gnosis means knowledge.
Yeah, so it's knowing God directly.
The difference between the Gnostics and those of the, you know, Catholic, you know, the Roman Catholic Church is Gnostics believed that the only thing that mattered was your personal experience, and that you can't be saved by someone else. That, you know, Christ didn't come here to save, that he came here to give information so that you can save yourself, and the kingdom of heaven is within you, not somewhere else, and that you needed to get your own information, as opposed to the Catholic Church, which was saying you need to do it through the church, that there was a pathway, you had to do it through someone else, and that you just came and, you know, took the Eucharist, but that it was the priest who was the one that you had to get all of your salvation through, and it was Christ who you had to get your salvation through.
So there is the ability through Gnosticism to, all right. So here's a bit of personal with you. 30 years ago, I was in a coma, and one of the dream, lucid dreams experiences that I had, I don't remember very much of it, but I do remember being underground in the desert learning stuff.
Wow.
There are some others which were very traumatic, which were, you know, that I remember those much more. They were kind of like horror movies, like being
you
in a horror movie.
Remember this from when you were in a coma?
Yeah.
When you came out of the coma, you had memories of dreaming in that coma?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that was possible.
Well, I was kind of out, basically, you know, I got knocked out of my body. I hit a car at 60 miles an hour and you know, not the bike at 60 miles. I was flying at 60 miles an hour basically into the side of a car. my spirit bodies just kept going. It took a while before they kind of snapped back into my body, and I needed a little bit of help to kind of shoehorn them back in. That's when I learned about subtle bodies. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? You know, and I went to a chiropractor. You were supposed to be fixing my back, aren't you? He said, talking about these subtle bodies and these etheric bodies and all this stuff. And I'm like, and, you know, slowly it's dawning on me what he's talking about. And, he was an amazing teacher, and, you know, I just like had to go to him because he was fixing my back and making my back a lot better. But he did a lot more than making my back better, because he was actually a healer at the same time. And most of the times whenever I've done my back in, and I've done them, done me back in, you know, it's like I've torn my back many times, since then, because it's kind of been vulnerable. And, every time I go, I meet a healer that teaches me something. So they're all lessons. So when I've now got the attitude that, you know, people say, oh, I'm under attack or I'm targeted. No. Consider it as training. just consider it training, and you'll be able to cope with it, because if you consider it training, it's not a victim thing, and you're empowering, and it's like the weirding module in the Dune films.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, like these training things that throw knives at you so that you can avoid them and learn to be the flexible, godlike being that you're talking about. And
yeah,
it's very interesting because, probably you're aware, but you may not be aware, that the Masons and the Mormons are very connected because they're trying to restore the temple tradition, which is the
of
same
course,
thing.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I was yeah, married in the temple and I did my endowments. So I know the, you know, I've taken out, you know, I've done that ceremony.
You don't
and
still
I,
wear the underwear thing?
Not anymore. No.
What did it feel like against the skin? Was it like soft and comfortable or what? I mean, no, really, because that's the whole Mormon, the experience of being a Mormon is like being always in this thing.
I cannot believe you're asking this question.
Sorry, but I mean, it just passed my mind, and you're probably the best person to talk about the sensual experience of being a Mormon. Because, yeah, by the way, I'm a Mormon elder, according to some small sect in Manti. I was baptized in the River Avon. And they said, oh yes, you're an elder because you're born in the tribe of Levi and all this bollocks. So anyway, I just thought,
if I can put this in your terms, you are actually asking me about my Mormon knickers?
Yeah. Tell me what you're wearing. Because you see, a lot of people don't understand what I just was talking about. And it's known as the garment. And
exactly,
with a capital G, you know, is the garment. And it's a kind of spiritual armor, isn't it?
Well, yes, I want to be respectful of it because, you know, a lot of fun is made about it and you can go online and you can see a pair. I mean, they're modeled online. But really, truly, you know, when you take, anyone who takes out their endowments and they go, there's a lot of sincerity in it and it's an initiation and you're making a commitment. So, you know, when I was a Mormon and I wore them, I didn't love it. I'm telling you, I mean, you know, they're not really that comfortable. And, most everyone who, you know, when they've left the church, it's one of the best things they get rid of, you know, it's just like they're as happy as could be.
It's like peeling off a reptilian skin, isn't it?
it's the fashion of them, not just the fashion, but just, you know, they're kind of hot in the summertime and they're made of, not natural fibers. So, they're not the best thing. You don't really want to have to wear them if you don't have to, but they have certain symbols on them that have meaning, and they are actually the symbols on them are the symbols that are the Masonic symbols as well. And it really does have to do with protection and health and probably not ever getting laid by anyone other than your partner, because who would like to see you in those underwear? So
yeah, it's not exactly you want to flaunt that at a club.
Exactly.
So essentially, because I want people to understand that it's a traumatic situation for them to be who they are. It's a forever challenging. It can stress you right out, especially if you're very sensitive. You know.
When you talk about being who they are, what are you referring to?
You know, just existing in your physical skin suit in the Mormon church.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
yes.
It's stressful from the moment you wake up in the morning to the moment you go to sleep, if you do sleep.
Well, you know, it was for me. And I have to say that my parents and family love, love, love it. Mm. What I've really realized about religion is this. You fall in love or you don't. And the people that are really into their religions, what I see, it's just like a relationship. You know, you fall in love and you want everyone to love what you're in love with. Mm. But, and if they're not, it's really disappointing. you know. But I wouldn't say to somebody who's just fallen in love, you know, let me tell you about the person you're in love with. I tried that kind of, and nobody wants to hear that, you know. I just wasn't that in love, and it just didn't feel right to my spirit. But it so feels right to them, and they are so happy, and I want their happiness. So if I love them, why wouldn't I support that, you know?
Thank you. So would you like to, do you want me to roll the?
Yeah, why don't you roll it, and then we're going to play. We're going to put on a play, okay?
I'll roll Shania Knoll, and then we'll do a role play, shall we?
And then you're going to get me hooked up.
I'm going to hook you up, baby. Okay, all right, so here's Shania Knoll with Return Again. We are back. Audio issues notwithstanding. Here we are. Aurora and I are now, we discovered that her microphone, the brand new microphone, doesn't actually fit in her Macintosh, which is why I always say, bloody Macintoshes. Anyway, people say they're so brilliant. They're so wonderful. And I've never managed to like plug one in even. Anyway, now shall we go?
You've just taken my computer's name in vain.
Oh, bless its little processor. Bless its little silicon heartless heart pumping away with its digits and its bits and its bytes and its giganets. Anyway, meanwhile, where are we?
Let's just jump in.
Shall we start with the magic time machine music? We start all the stories.
Yes. Yeah, I want the time machine.
You need the time machine. Here we go.
Yeah, I do. The creation story of the Archons and their descendants, or a creation story for realized humans. Prologue. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. This source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness. The gateway to all understanding. From the Tao Te Ching. Scene 1, before the beginning.
Greetings. I want you to know that all men born from the foundation of the world until now are dust. While they have inquired about God, who he is and what he is like, they have not found him. The wisest among them have speculated about the truth from the ordering of the world, and the speculation has not reached the truth. Now we have come to teach you what is, what was, and what is to come, that you may understand what is invisible and what is visible, and to teach you about the unshakable race of perfect humankind. So now, lift up your head that you may understand the things that we shall tell you today, and that you may relate them to your spiritual friends, who are from the unshakable race of perfect humankind.
Since everyone, the gods of the world and people, say that nothing existed prior to chaos, we shall demonstrate that they are mistaken, since they do not know the origin of chaos and its roots. Here is the demonstration. How agreeable it is to all people to say that chaos is darkness, but actually, chaos comes from a shadow that has been called darkness. The shadow comes from something existing from the beginning. So it is obvious that something in the beginning existed before chaos came into being, and that chaos came after what was in the beginning.
Now, let us consider the facts of the matter, and in particular what was in the beginning from which chaos came. In this way, the truth will be clearly demonstrated. Scene 2. The Father.
We begin with the Father, who is the root of the totality.
He existed before anything other than himself came into being. The Father is a single one, like a number, for he is the first one and the one who is only himself.
Let us tell you about the One. Please understand this. The One is a sovereign that has nothing over it. It is God and Father of all, the invisible One that is over all, that is incorruptible, that is pure light at which no one can gaze.
The One is the invisible Spirit. We should not think of it as a God or like a God, for it is greater than a God because it has nothing over it and no Lord above it.
It does not exist within anything inferior to it, since everything exists within it alone.
It is eternal, since it does not need anything, for it is absolutely complete. It has never lacked anything in order to be completed by it. Rather, it is always absolutely complete in light.
The One is illimitable, since there is nothing before it to limit it. Unfathomable, since there is nothing before it to fathom it.
Immeasurable, since there was nothing before it to measure it.
Invisible, since nothing has seen it.
Eternally, eternal, since it exists eternally.
Unutterable, since nothing could comprehend it to utter it.
Unnameable, since there is nothing before it to give it a name.
The One is the immeasurable light, pure, holy, immaculate.
The One is unutterable and is perfect in incorruptibility. Not that it is part of perfection or blessedness or divinity, it is much greater.
The One is not corporeal and is not incorporeal. The One is not large and is not small.
It is impossible to say how much it is, what kind it is, for no one can understand it.
The One is not among the things that exist, but is much greater. Not that it is greater. Rather, that it is in itself. It is not part of the eternal realms or of time, for whatever is part of a realm was once prepared by another.
Time was not allotted to it, since it receives nothing from anyone. What would be received would be alone.
The One who is first does not need to receive anything from another. Such a one beholds itself in its light.
The One is majestic and has an immeasurable purity.
The One is a realm that gives a realm, life that gives life, a blessed one that gives blessedness, knowledge that gives knowledge, a good one that gives goodness, mercy that gives mercy and redemption, grace that gives grace.
Not as if the One possesses all this. Rather, it is that the One gives immeasurable and incomprehensible light.
What shall I tell you about it? Its eternal realm is incorruptible, at peace, dwelling in silence, at rest, before everything.
It is the head of all realms, and it sustains them through its goodness.
It is the Virgin Spirit. It is not appropriate to think about it as God or that it is something similar, for it surpasses divinity.
It is a dominion having nothing to rule over it, for there is nothing existing before it. It does not have any need of them.
It does not need life, for it is internal. It doesn't need anything, for it cannot be made perfect as though it were deficient and only required perfecting. Rather, it is always totally perfect. It is light.
It cannot be limited because there's nothing before it to limit it.
It is inscrutable, for there is no one before it to scrutinize it.
It is an eternity existing forever.
It is ineffable because no one has comprehended it in order to speak about it.
It is the One whose name cannot be spoken because no one exists before it to name it.
Nothing
from the all exists before
it. Its aeon is indestructible, being in a state of tranquility, at rest, in silence,
unchanging, good, faultless, everlasting, blessed, unknowable, while he nonetheless knows himself.
He is called
Father
of the universe.
The
Lord of the universe is not rightly called Father, but Forefather, for the Father is the beginning or principle of what is visible. For he is the beginningless Forefather.
Now the unknowable is ever full of imperishableness and ineffable joy. They are all at rest in him, ever rejoicing in ineffable joy over the unchanging glory and the measureless jubilation that was never heard or known among all the aeons and their worlds.
But this much is enough, lest we go on endlessly. Break here for discussion, it says here.
Exactly. Yes.
It's all very well scripted out. Yeah. How am I doing?
Let me just tell you, I'm shrinking compared to your godlike voice. you're doing fabulously.
This sounds very familiar. I read the Tao Te Ching, when I was about 21. And it was like the first time I moved out of home, literally. I moved out of home and, the flat where I'd got a room with a woman who had books, and she had this book and it was beautiful. And I picked this book up. It just called to me, and I picked this beautiful book up and I opened the page and it said something that I thought instantly, wow, this guy thinks just like I do. And so actually, you know, having said the disclaimer at the beginning of the show, because I hadn't read what I was about to read, this does feel kind of like this. It's almost like I know these teachings.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the Tao Te Ching was written way before these books, these texts in the Nag Hammadi were written. And, you know, as somebody who studied the Tao a lot and, you know, I got the very same impression. It's like, this is the Tao Te Ching. This is the beginning, the cosmology of Taoism. And, so, you know, I know that you and I have talked about this, but I don't know if your listeners know, they might, but you know, during the time of Jesus and during, the time when Joseph of Arimathea came to England, they called what Jesus was teaching the way. And that is what Tao means, the way. And so I believe there's got to be some connection in these texts, that these texts come from very old, cosmology that the Gnostics, I believe Gnosticism and Taoism are very, very, very close, in terms of, and of course there's a lot of different schools of Gnosticism, but there are some that are almost like very identical. A Taoist could probably sit with a Gnostic and they can hang, you know.
Well, you know, as an archbishop I met on the London Underground Tube, said to me one day, I just mentioned numbers, and he said, just leaned forward. It's like, the reason numbers are there, because it's the truth. He said, you know, it's like, yeah, that's why, you know, it's because we're both talking the truth from your own perspective. And that's what I like. I like to be able to bring the perspective together so that we all can bounce off and as Dan Winter says, conjugate the phase conjugate, which basically mean, I've now discovered that this is exactly what you have to do with, a solar panel and when you generate electricity technical terms, it's called grid tying. So you tie in with the frequency of the national grid that you're connected in, and then you can send electricity back down the line, that is in phase. So when we're in phase, like, for instance, when you breathe together, this is what I've noticed during my sessions, is that I breathe with the person, and then then we go along the journey, because we're literally on the same wavelength. So when people breathe together in the same frequency, that is how we all attune. That's literally what's going on. We can change our heartbeat and we can change our breathing rate.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
So just to kind of, talk about what we just read.
Count on me for off topic. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. You and I are breathing together right now, and I noticed you did that with me when we had our together moment. So, so first there was pure existence, something that existed without consciousness and without a name. It was empty yet pregnant with potential and potential for all manifestations. And this is very, Taoist and, you know, this is the Taoist cosmology. It was pure stillness. The Gnostics call it the one, the undifferentiated, invisible virgin spirit. It is the spring of living water. And so we're going to go into the next part because this, this intelligence could not experience itself, for it had nothing to compare itself to. It was in the ocean. It was all this water and living water like an ocean, but it could not understand wetness, for there was nothing dry to compare itself to. It was like being asleep yet with potential to awake, and an impulse, arises. And, so the next part that we're going to talk about is the impulse that arises from this ineffable virgin spirit. And, I was going to say one other thing about that. Oh yeah. Just a reminder that the scene, the first one is number one, the one in the beginning. So we started off with one. So the next scene, go ahead and introduce it, JP.
Scene three, one becomes two, or Barbalo appears. Is that how you pronounce it?
I say Barbalo, but that's American and Barbalo. I like that. Barbalo appears.
Barbalo.
Barbalo.
Like bar and below. Below the bar. That's kind of so let's go below the bar. Now
we've heard names so far.
Yeah. So this is the first name we get. Now. This father is the one who beholds itself in the light surrounding him. This light is the spring of living water and provides for all the realms. The spring of the spirit flowed from the living water of the light, and it abundantly supplied all the aeons and the worlds.
It is the one who knows itself alone in the light water that surrounds it, which is the spring of living water, the light which is full of purity. He reflects on his image everywhere, sees it in the spring of the spirit, and becomes enamored of his luminous water, for his image is in the spring of pure luminous water surrounding him. In every way it perceived its own image, seeing it in the pure light water which surrounds it.
And its thinking became a thing. She appeared.
She stood in its presence, in the brilliance of the light. She is the power which is before the all. It is she who appeared, she who is the perfect pro-noia, or forethought of the all, the light, the likeness of the light, the image of the invisible, she who is the perfect power, Barbalo, the perfect aeon of the glory.
The father's thought became a reality. And she who appeared in the presence of the Father in shining light came forth.
She is the first power who preceded everything and came forth from the Father's mind as the forethought of all. Her light shines like the Father's light. She, the perfect power, is the image of the perfect and invisible virgin spirit.
She, the first power, the glory of Barbalo. The perfect glory among the realms, the glory of revelation. She glorified and praised the virgin spirit, for because of the spirit she had come forth. She glorifies it because she appeared through it and she perceived it. Her glory glorifies it because she appeared through it. She is the primal thought, protonoia, its image. First thought speaks.
I am first thought,
the thought that is in light. I am movement that is in all. She in whom the realm of all takes its stand. The firstborn among those who came into being. She who exists before all. She who is called by three names, although she exists alone, since she is perfect. I am invisible within the thought of the invisible one. I am revealed in the immeasurable, ineffable things. I am intangible, dwelling in the intangible. I move in every creature.
She is the first thought, the image of the spirit, and thus she became the universal womb, for she precedes everything.
The mother father.
The first human.
The Holy Spirit.
The triple male.
The triple power.
The androgynous one with three names.
The eternal realm among the invisible beings.
The first to come forth.
Scene 4. First thought asks for four gifts and glorifies the virgin spirit.
Barbello asked the invisible virgin spirit to give her foreknowledge, and the spirit consented.
When the spirit consented, immediately foreknowledge appeared and stood by forethought, the first one who came from the thought of the invisible virgin spirit.
Foreknowledge glorified the spirit and the spirit's perfect power. Barbello, for because of her, foreknowledge had come into being.
Foreknowledge, I glorify your perfect power because of the virgin spirit and because of Barbello, I have come into being.
Barbello, forethought, asked again to be given another gift, incorruptibility,
she should be
imperishable and indestructible. All right, I'll start it again. Barbello, forethought, asked again to be given another gift, incorruptibility, so that she would be imperishable and indestructibility. And the virgin spirit consented.
When the spirit consented, immediately incorruptibility appeared and stood by thought and foreknowledge.
Incorruptibility glorified the invisible one and Barbello. Because of her, they had come into being.
Incorruptibility says, I glorify your perfect power. Because of the virgin spirit and because of Barbello, I have come into being.
Barbello asked to be given the gift of life eternal, and the invisible spirit consented.
When the spirit consented, immediately life eternal appeared and came and stood with forethought, who's Barbello, foreknowledge and incorruptibility.
They glorified the invisible spirit and Barbello. Because of her, they had come into being.
Life eternal says, I glorify your perfect power. Because of the virgin spirit and because of Barbello, I have come into being.
Barbello asked again to be given one more gift. The gift of truth. The invisible spirit who is the all consented. Truth immediately appeared and stood together with Barbello, foreknowledge, incorruptibility and life eternal. They glorified the good invisible spirit and its Barbello. Because of her, they had come into being.
Truth says, I glorify your perfect power. Because of the virgin spirit and because of Barbello, I have come into being.
This is the Father's realm of five. One, Barbello, who is the first human, the image of the invisible spirit, that is forethought, which is primal thought. Two, the second real is foreknowledge.
The second realm is foreknowledge.
The third is incorruptibility. The fourth is life eternal. And the fifth is truth. This is the androgynous realm of five, which is actually the realm of ten, because it includes both masculine and feminine. This is the pentad, meaning five, of the aeons of the mother, who in the primal human, the image of the invisible one, namely Barbello, foreknowledge, incorruptibility, and eternal life. This is the androgynous pentad, which is the decad, or ten parts, of the aeons, the mother from the unbegotten father. First thought speaks to the earth humans.
I am the life of my afterthought, that is within every power and every eternal movement, and in invisible lights, and within the powers and angels and demons and every soul in Tartarus, which is Hades, and in every material soul. I live in those who came into being. I move in everyone, and I enter them. I walk upright, and those who sleep, I awaken. And I am the sight of those who dwell in sleep. I am the invisible one in all. I counsel those who are hidden, since I know the whole realm of all that exists in it. I am numberless beyond everyone. I am immeasurable, ineffable, yet whenever I wish, I shall reveal myself. I am the head of all. I am before all. And I am all, since I am in everyone. I am a voice speaking softly. I am from the beginning. I am in the silence that surrounds every one of them. And the hidden voice is in me, intangible, immeasurable thought, in the immeasurable silence. I descended into the underworld and shone down on the darkness. I poured water. I am hidden in radiant waters. I gradually dawn on all by my thought. I am weighed down with the voice. Through me, knowledge comes. I am in the ineffable and unknowable. I am perception and knowledge, uttering a voice by means of thought. I am the real voice. I cry out in everyone, and they recognize it, since a seed lives in them. I am the Father's thought, and through me came the voice, the knowledge of everlasting things. I am as thought for all. I am joined to unknowable and intangible thought. I revealed myself in all who know me, for I joined everyone in hidden thought and exalted voice, and in a voice from the invisible thought.
Break for discussion.
So
that was quite a speech.
Yeah.
I'm the
life. I just wanted to say, you know, if people didn't get this or I hadn't really said it before, all of this is taken from, I piece them together from different texts in the Nag Hammadi. You won't find, the Nag Hammadi written in the way that I've written it. I've written it in more of a play-like form, in a liturgical type play form. These are different voices from some different writers. This is the first time it's been read out loud, so I hope that it isn't, it's making some sense. But that's where I've maybe just added a few tweaks here and there, but most all of this comes directly from the Gnostic, Gospels from the Nag Hammadi.
Excellent. Excellent. So, it's talking from the standpoint of, it's very interesting, talking about the creation of the mind of the Father. I watched the first episode of Caprica last night. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't. What is it about?
It's the prequel to, Battlestar Galactica.
Okay, really?
Yeah, and it's the creation of the machine that they call the Xylon. Which is essentially their robot super soldier, and the intelligence that they use was, there was a genius father who was like a sort of Bill Gates, and he had a daughter, who was kind of rebellious, and she hacked his, holographic network to create a kind of sub-network that was like, you know, you can do anything. It's like a virtual reality, like Second Life now. She creates a virtual reality version of herself that she downloads everything and causes it to download everything more about herself, and then links it with her own emotions so that it's tied to her, and she would visit it in this strange sort of underground club. So basically the daughter creates this thing And then she gets killed in a terrorist attack, and there's this thing that's left. And that thing, that bereft child, young consciousness, becomes the digital basis of the Xylon warrior, because it's angry.
Okay. Well,
creepy,
actually,
huh? So anyway, that sounds very much like the creation of the Archons.
It is, and we'll be getting to that next time, big time.
Next time in the next,
next time, big time.
Exciting episode of whatever this goes on. But anyway, so go ahead.
It's exactly that. And you know, what we're finding here, and again, this is like, you know, the separation of the Tao into yin and yang. So there's, you know, male and female, but, what we're getting here, what we're really learning here is that everything comes from thought. And that's how powerful our thoughts are, is that all is created through thought. So we have forethought, we have foreknowledge, and so, you know, that's where the voice comes from, that's where the child's gonna come from in a second. But that's, you know, what they are saying is that we are our thoughts and we create this world. You know, following up what you were saying to me earlier is, we create this world through our thoughts. The Gnostics, this was their creation story, is everything comes from thought. So just to kind of reiterate, the impulse that was the father enjoying the luminous water surrounding itself became enamored with its light, falling in love with the image of itself it saw in the waters of life. It had a thought which became reality, which was Barbellos. Okay, that's what her name is. And it actually, I think, means four. And what came forth was a mate. It came forth as female, and the female aspect of the one. She came forth as the mate to the invisible spirit, and in this way, the invisible spirit then took the role of male or father, and she the female or mother, who is the womb of all. So something was now differentiated, and it was like a mirror was created so that the one could now experience itself. And the female aspect's name was forethought, because she was the power in the one that came before all other thoughts. So forethought arose to create a reality. She preceded everything and came forth as a female from his mind. She is the pure, pristine, and undamaged power of thought, and her light shines like that of the one original, who we can say is the father or husband to her, for she came forth as the first manifestation and creation of the one. And of course, her first impulse was to glorify and praise the one, for it was, you know, through the living water of the Virgin Spirit that she came forth, as the first thought and the image of the invisible spirit. She became the universal womb for everyone, for every thought, which includes all of us that came after her, for she precedes before all the other thoughts that came after her. So that's just a kind of overall, summation of what we just read.
Okay, so, and shall we continue what we should just read?
Yeah, I think we're, this is the last part here, so yeah.
Okay.
So we'll move on to scene 5, do you want to?
Scene 5, engage the time machine.
Thank you, yeah. Okay. Scene 5, 2 becomes 3. Or the anointed one is conceived.
The father gazed into Barbalo with the pure light surrounding the invisible spirit and its radiance. Barbalo conceived from its pure light, and it produced a spark of light similar to the blessed light, but not as great.
Barbalo gazed intently into it, the pure light. She turned herself toward it. She gave birth to a spark of blessed light, but it was not equal to her in greatness. This is the only begotten who appeared from the Father, the Divine.
This was the only child of the Mother-Father that had come forth, its only offspring, the only child of the Father, the pure light.
The self-conceived, or autogenes,
the firstborn son of the all, of the spirit of pure light.
The invisible spirit rejoiced over the light which had come into being, the one who was first to appear from the primal power, which is its pronoia, barbello, or forethought.
The invisible spirit anointed the child with its goodness, or Christhood, so that the child became perfect.
There was no lack of good or Christ within him, because he was anointed in the invisible spirit's goodness, or Christhood, which it poured out for him.
The child received the anointing through the virginal spirit, who is the all and the one.
The child stood in the presence of the spirit as the spirit anointed the child.
He stood in its presence, glorifying the invisible spirit and the perfect pronoia from whom he had appeared.
When the child received the anointing from the spirit, at once it glorified the spirit, its father, and perfect forethought, its mother.
Because of her it had come forth.
Anointed child, I glorify your perfect powers. Hang on, is this the anointed child speaking?
Yes.
All right, so I need a different voice. I just have to register a couple of octaves higher. I glorify your perfect powers. Because of the Virgin Spirit and because of Barbello, I have come into being.
This first beloved child asked to be given one single thing. It wanted mind as a companion to work with. He wanted mind as a fellow worker.
And the Virgin Spirit consented, and mind appeared.
Mind stood with Christ, glorifying the Spirit and Barbello.
This is mind speaking now. I'm going to use a different voice now. Mind. I glorify your perfect powers. Because of the Virgin Spirit and because of Barbello, I have come into being.
Now all these beings came into existence in silence and thought. So everything came into existence through silence and thought. But mind wished to create something by means of the word of the invisible spirit. Its will became a reality and appeared with mind and the light, glorifying both.
Will now speak. I glorify the mind and the light. Because of them, I have come into being.
The will asked to be given the word, as the word always follows the will.
This was granted, and the word came and stood by the will and the mind and glorified them all.
And this is the word. I glorify the mind and the will and the anointed one, Barbello's and the Virgin Spirit. Because of them, I have come into being.
The anointed, the self-conceived Christ, created everything by the word.
For through the word, Christ, the self-conceived, created everything.
Life eternal, will, mind, foreknowledge, and the self-conceived, who is the anointed one, stood together and glorified the invisible spirit and Barbello, since they had come into being through her.
The Virgin Spirit brought the self-conceived divine child of itself and Barbello into perfection, so that the child might stand before the great invisible Virgin Spirit as a self-conceived God, the anointed, who honored the Spirit with loud acclaim.
The Spirit perfected the divine, eternal, autogenous, the son of Barbello, so that he could set the true self-conceived God over everything. It gave to him all authority, and it caused the truth, which is in it, to be subject to him, in order that he might know the all.
The one called by a name greater than every name, for that name will be told only to those who are worthy to hear it. The Virgin Spirit speaks and Barbello speaks.
The Son is perfect in every respect. He is the Word who originated through that voice, who came from on high, who has within him the name who is light. The Son revealed the everlasting, and all the unknown was known. He revealed what is hard to interpret and what is secret, and he preached to those who live in silence with first thought. And he revealed himself to those who are in darkness, and he clarified himself to those in the abyss. To those in the hidden treasures he told ineffable mysteries, and he taught unspeakable doctrines to all those who became children of the light. Now the voice that came from my thought exists as three permanences: the Father, the Mother, the Son. The voice is perceptible speech containing a word rich in every glory. It has three masculinities, three powers, and three names. They are in the manner of the triad of three shapes, which are quadrangles, secretly in silence of the ineffable one.
He alone came into being as the anointed. I anointed him with goodness as the glory of the invisible spirit. I established these three alone in glory over the eternal realms in living water. Glory surrounds him who first appeared in the light of the exalted aeons and realms. He persists in light. And he stood in a light surrounding him, who is the eye of light gloriously shining on me. He gave aeons for the father of all aeons. I, the thought of the father, first thought, Barbello, the perfect glory and the immeasurable, invisible, hidden one. I am the image of the invisible spirit. Through me all took shape. I am the mother as well as the light, whom she appointed as virgin. She who is called Neurothia, the intangible womb, the unrestrained and immeasurable voice.
Then the perfect son revealed himself to his aeons who came through him. He revealed, glorified, and enthroned them, and stood in the glory made for himself.
They blessed the perfect child, the anointed, the God who came into being by himself, and they gave glory, saying,
He is God's son.
God's son.
He is.
The
being of eternal beings.
He sees the eternal beings that he conceived, for you have conceived by your own desire.
So we glorify you. Ma. Mo. You are. You are.
You are being.
The eternal realm of the eternal realms. The eternal realm he gave. End of Act One. Well, strangest show I've ever done.
You did such a great job. My goodness, that was, your voices were really wonderful.
Well, you know, I'm getting used to characterizing in the moment, since I'm thrown these, you know, like I was saying, you know, everything's training. Well, Andronicus has been quite a training to do this kind of thing. I received a training in being in the moment by being, running a jam session. That's the Studio 9 jam thing about my website, my, YouTube channel. It's because I used to jam every week and I have to make up tunes and play along with everybody, no matter what they were doing and no matter where they were from, just to figure out a way of playing along with them, just to tune in. So that was all good training as well.
Well, you are a master at it now, sir.
Well, there we go. That's how you do it. I never realized.
Yeah. Well, you are such an incredible speaker and reader, and, you know, you just have such a great voice. So, that was really fun to do with you.
You know, when I was a kid, I went to this, how can I put this? Oh yeah, poorly attended synagogue with my mother. And we traveled miles. We had to go bloody miles to it. And, you know, from my early teenage years, you slept along by your big Jewish mother. No, all right. Come on. I had to get up early on a Saturday morning when all I wanted to do was go to Saturday morning cinema with all the rest of my friends. Anyhow, resentment aside.
You're not bitter at all.
Not a trace. Not a trace through these clenched teeth. No, really, it was fine. It was fine. Because what happened is, because there was nobody there, it was like, really didn't matter who was, like, it wasn't a big do. So by playing to a small audience is very good, very good practice. Because you can, you know, make mistakes and like, only a few people are going to notice. Like, if you're playing to a full room, like, everybody notices and it, like, everybody is like a large number of people and that's not comfortable. But if you're playing to a small room, you know, you're performing essentially by reading, in public these sacred words, but it's a performance, whatever you're doing.
Yes. Yes.
And so I learned to read to be able to go up to the lectern, open the Bible at any, and just read it. I learned to read the language of it. And pronounce it just like as if it was a natural language, you see. Yeah. And then my mum always listened to BBC Radio 4, never listened to the music stations. I would have loved to have listened to BBC Radio 1, which played the music all the time. However, they listened to Radio 4, which is like people talking like this. And, this is where I got the accent from. And they would have radio plays and, I love the radio plays, and there was this thing called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and when I was about 13 years old in the 1970s, and it just blew my mind. This is what you can do with radio, and look what I'm doing now. You know, I'm doing
that's what we're doing right now is hitchhiking to the galaxies, because this text is taking us all the way back, way 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 back to the very 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 beginning.
In the beginning,
there was
the Tao. Begat the one begat the two, the two begat the three, and the three begat the 10,000 things, like everything. And that's the same stories we've just read, isn't it?
It is, and the 10,000 things is where the archons come in, and that's, if people want me to continue with this, next time that's where we go with this story. I really think it's very important to see this is the foundation. Because without this foundation, the rest of the story about the archons and what we are going through all on this planet in as humans is a very difficult story. It really truly is. And you know, when I left the Mormon Church, it was really hard for me to find, you know, when you leave a religion and you feel very disappointed with the people in it or the teachings that were hurtful or whatever. It's very easy to throw all the baby out with the bathwater. And I have for so much of my life tried to understand about Christ energy and who Jesus was, who Christ was. And a lot of the things that I learned from Dolores Cannon in some of her books, because she did hypno sessions with people who were around during the time of Christ and during the time of Qumran, and the Gnostics at that time. And so I have had several experiences now, actually giving hypno sessions to people who had lifetimes, one who had a lifetime around the time of Christ and who was helped by Christ, and another who was a nun in France, wasn't around that time. But both of these people, when they came out of hypnosis, were glowing with a glow I had never seen anyone come out with. And I'd actually done multiple hypno sessions with them, and the other sessions that didn't involve the Christ energy, they didn't glow. And other people even saw this glowing with the one person, people were stopping her on the street practically just looking at her. So I've rethought the Christ, what Christ energy is. And so when I was looking at this again, I'm like, of course. In Taoism, we call it yang, which is like the strongest of the two energies, yin and yang. And then shen, shen, which means spirit. And in Taoism, they say that we have each of us, in each of us, every human has a drop of yang shen. That yang shen is what we're talking about in these three beings, both the Christ energy, the first thought, and the virgin spirit. We are all three of those, and we all have that. And that is our way back home from this aeon that we are living in terms of being able to go back to perfection and incorruptibility, and that we can all know that we are, you know, we have the Vajra body, which means that we are invincible. We have an invincible body, and that is that Yang Shun. And so, so this was partly what came to me, you know, in terms of an aha moment of, oh, Christ is the anointed one. That's what Christ means, the anointed one. That's what that word means. Mm-hmm. The way, when we get into the archons, you know, they'll talk about how the archons make everything opposite.
Right.
And they say all these lies, but because, and you'll see, it's because humans have something they don't have. And I'm not going to say what that is yet, but it will be in the next episode if you're listening.
Stay tuned.
Like,
so please,
on.
Listen, we're completely out of time.
I know we are.
So, if anybody wants to hear part two, please let us know in the chat room and various other channels, please.
And also, did you post my website, the one that's for this?
Because I will, by the time the show is ended, I will have posted it, and it will be in the chat room, and they'll be hearing what I'm talking about.
Okay. That way, I've posted all this information there, and I'm even posting this text so you can go and see it again.
Excellent. So there we go. I'll just grab it there, copy, and undefined. There we are.
And while you're doing that, I'll just let everybody know it's Aurora Lulu 33, Aurora AURORALULU 33 wixsite.com/immortal-way.
Thank you very much, Aurora.
Thank you, JP. Much love to you all.
Good night.
Good night.
Beyond.